Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY24 earnings conference call of MPS Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Arora, Chairman and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Seema. Good afternoon on a cold day in Gurugram, and welcome to our Q3 FY24 earnings call. Today on the call, I have with me Sumit Malhotra, CFO of MPS, who is with me at our Gurugram office, Sukhwant Singh, Chief Operating Officer of our India operations, joins us from our corporate office in Noida. Sumit will kick things off in our opening segment today by discussing our financial performance. Then Sukhwant will update us on our content solutions business. I will then discuss the short-term disappointment in our e-learning business and follow up with progress in our platform business. Finally, I will provide an update on the progress of AI/ML in our business, acquisitions, and an overall philosophy on capital allocation. Let's get going. Over to you, Sumit.
Thanks, Rahul. Q3 FY24 was a flat quarter for MPS. At an EBITDA of INR 44.64 crores, margins did expand, and at 8.11%, EBITDA growth was faster than revenue growth. The margin expansion theme also held YTD as EBITDA grew at 14.4%, even though revenue growth was limited to 6.62%. Our diversification agenda, launched in 2020, continued as our top 10 customers accounted for less than 50% of our revenue, and revenue from the rest of the world was in the early double digits in Q3 FY24, even though North America was our largest market. I want to hand it over now to Sukhwant to discuss the developments in our CS business.
Thank you, Sumit. So revenue in our content solution business grew by almost 8% in quarter three of FY24 compared to the last year. Given the operating leverage in the business, EBITDA margins expanded to 43%. The scholarly lines of our content solution business continue to lead the charge towards revenue growth and margin expansion. In the scholarly marketplace, we have launched new capabilities linked to the journal editorial office that are placed in a more strategic position in the value chain, which has not only resulted in the new business from net new customers but also improved the stickiness and quality of our revenue with existing customers. Together with the Hivaya suite of products, this new JEO service compounds our capabilities and positions us as the only techno service provider at the front end of the scholarly publishing value chain. Additionally, volumes and revenue from our star customers' base grew because our service delivery has been among the best in the supply chain as it has consolidated. Overall, the content solution momentum was held back only by a temporary blip in the education side of our content solution business, which is expected to correct in FY25. I continue to remain bullish about our CS content solution business over the next 3 years, and particularly in FY25, where we expect to level up. Thank you, and I want to hand it over now to Rahul to conclude our opening remarks. Over to you, Rahul.
Thank you, Sukhwant. E-learning continued as the second-largest business segment. FX-adjusted revenues were similar to 99.50 crores in the first 9 months of FY24. In complete transparency, we are behind our expectations in the scale-up of this business in FY24. The e-learning business has four operating entities, including India, Germany, Switzerland, and now Australia. All the international subsidiaries outside of India have had a successful Q3, and the first 9 months of FY24, they've all been growing at double digits in revenue and also at healthy margins. Our India entity has had a bumpy period because of the deferment of a large project. In September of 2023, a premier corporation in the energy space awarded us a contract to develop and deliver a state-of-the-art experience center. The contract's total value was expected to be 40 crores INR, all to be executed in this fiscal. Unfortunately, this large project has been deferred to a later period, resulting in some short-term pain in this business. Overall, we expect revenues in this entity and the e-learning business to get back to their pickup in Q1 of FY25 and margins to improve as early as Q4 FY24. Moving on to our platform business, which is marketed as Hivire, we've entered a new phase. On a nine-month basis, revenue in the platform business grew by 5% and margins stood firm at 45.47%. Execution of product roadmaps was on schedule for the entire platform suite in FY24. The marketplace has well received new features and functionalities, and there are several monetization opportunities through implementation projects and migration programs. We launched two new SaaS products, DigiCore Pro and ThinkWeb, in Q3 FY24. We expect short-term revenue growth in FY25 through customer migrations from older platforms and even more remarkable growth in this business from new customers from FY26 onward. The advances in AI ML have a proportionate impact on the entire ecosystem, affecting our customers, competitors, industry, and the macroeconomic environment. Instead of perceiving AI ML as a threat, we view it as an opportunity to differentiate ourselves again in a fragmented market which is ripe for consolidation. To spearhead this transformation, we launched a new initiative called MPS Labs, a pioneering initiative headquartered in Bangalore. The teams have made substantive progress in 2023. In the coming months, we expect to make a fairly significant announcement around a new launch related to AI. So do stay tuned for that announcement. I'm now moving on to capital allocation and acquisitions. As I shared in 2023, we expect more acquisitions in 2024. The next phase of acquisitions will significantly enhance our revenue base and scale, and therefore enable a more rapid approach to Vision 2027 than we had originally planned. On capital allocation, our priority is always to redistribute surplus funds to the shareholders of MPS, provided there are no imminent uses for those funds over the next 6 to 12 months. This approach allows us to stay focused, disciplined, and responsible. We believe that even after concluding the next upcoming transaction, MPS will possibly sit on surplus funds and plan a distribution at the next board meeting. Let us now open the call to your wonderful questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We take our first question from the line of Keshav Garg from Counter PMS. Please go ahead, sir.
Sir, I'm trying to understand that with the setback in our e-learning division, probably short-term setback, sir, is our guidance of consolidated PAT of over 140 crore in FY24, does it still stand, and which basically translates into 50 crore PAT in the fourth quarter? So are we on track to achieve that?
Yeah, so the short answer is no. The guidance was, of course, 135 crores of north of 135 crores of PAT. And the short answer is no. We're trying our best to make up as much as possible. As you can imagine, 40 crore deferment of revenue, which, for a 500 crore revenue business is pretty significant. And you'd appreciate that our experience center business actually operates at a premium on margin. So if our e-learning business operates at 20-25%, experience center business operates at 30-35%. So yes, it is a bit of a setback, but like you said, short-term pain. We stay committed to Vision 2027 of the race to 1,500 crores in revenue at similar margins. So yes, 3-6 months of short-term pain, but overall, we feel determined that, we will approach that Vision 2027 of 1,500 crores even more rapidly than we had planned before. Short-term bumps happen in any business.
I'm trying to understand this 40 crore order that you are talking about, sir. So was there any contribution from this in the third quarter of last financial year?
There was a similar project. So this experience center business normally has 1 to 3 projects every year. So there was a similar, and we don't take on more than that because it's a huge effort of, not just internal capacity, but external capacity. So we typically take on, anything between 1 to 3 projects a year. And yes, last year we were at India Energy Week around the same time, and we had powered the India Pavilion in Bangalore, which was delivered by us. So yes, we had some revenue, a decent amount of revenue from this type of work last year, which we do not have this year. This year we were supposed to do even better. Like I said, awarded in September, the project was supposed to be executed between late October to early March, but that project has been deferred.
Sir, even so, sir, our margins, so what's the reason for our margins going down to around 16%? Basically, margins from mid-20s, they are down to something like 16%. So even apart from the experience and plus the e-learning division was doing mid-20s margins.
Yes, we have prepared a pretty decent burst capacity for this project. As you can imagine, to even win such a project, it takes a lot of management bandwidth, delivery team bandwidth. You end up building prototypes and proof of concepts, and knowing that we were going to go live very, very soon, and the timeline was similar to 90 days, to deliver a 40 crore project in 90 days is no mean feat. So we had already started to assemble that capacity, and therefore have had to incur some costs there. That capacity, of course, has now been dismantled.
Sir, and also, sir, the e-learning division revenues, sir, so they are they inclusive of the Australian acquisition that we did recently?
Yes, they include the Australian acquisition.
Sir, so despite that, year-on-year, our revenues are down despite the acquisition. Sir, so I'm just trying to understand that apart from the e-learning order, sir, the rest of the e-learning business, sir, it seems that being some more because numbers don't add up because considering that Australian.
To break up 40 into 30 and 10, and you divide them into Q3 and Q4 that way, the numbers do add up.
Okay.
We've lost revenue.
Also, sir, in
revenues of zeros.
Hello.
We've lost revenues of 40 crores. So if you add those 30 plus 10 into the respective quarters, the numbers do add up. Please take a minute to reconcile.
Hello, Mr. Jain. Are you done with your question, sir? Hello, Mr. Jain. Can you hear me? As there's no response from the line of the current questioner, we move on to the next question. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, please limit your question to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we would request you to rejoin the question queue. We take the next question from the line of Hrishikesh Kalis, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so you have given a guidance of 130 crores for this year. So is there any revised guideline that you would like to give in terms of this temporary setback?
Yeah, I don't. Thank you for your question. I don't think we'll be giving any guidance for this financial year. It is a setback, and we're all focused on making sure we deliver the best we can. I believe we are going to fall short. How much short? We'll update you once the numbers are out.
Okay, and you mentioned about another acquisition in North America. Is that still in process or?
Yeah, so there is, like I said, there's an upcoming, there are actually two upcoming acquisitions. I did not mention North America. I had mentioned that it's in the platform business. To reiterate, we are now looking at acquisitions that give us a heavy scale up so that we can ramp up quickly. So we're only looking at companies north of $20 million in revenue. So anything above 160, 170 crores in revenue. And we're hoping that we will close two and ideally one in the short term.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Dhruv Bajaj from SmartSync Investment Advisory. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello. I'm audible?
Hi. Yes, you are.
Yes, yes. So the first question that I have is, so sir, currently our split between content platform and e-learning solution is 2:1:1. So going forward by FY28, do we have any target split in mind?
No, I don't think we have a target in terms of the split. Of course, you know, we are opportunistic and we want all segments to grow. Having said that, I think, you know, today, you know, content is as much as, you know, in the 50s. We expect that number to be lower. An ideal, you know, an ideal mathematic world would be a third, a third, a third. But, you know, it's difficult to predict because, you know, the content business is also growing. You know, as Supan pointed out, our scholarly business on the content side is growing north of 15%. It just got held back because of a minor blip in education. But once they both start to perform, which is expected as early as Q1 of next financial year, even content will be growing at double digits. So, difficult to predict. You could see some dilution in content. Now, whether that will be, you know, whether it will be at 40-30-30 or, you know, what that mix will look like, only time will tell. At a very high level, at the maximum, we'll see some dilution in content portion.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, sir. So, what is the aiding the margins in platform business? As in Q2 and Q3, slow growth in revenues. Margin have expanded around 1,300 basis points. We have also seen a decent headcount addition.
Sorry, I heard your observations. Could you repeat the question and I can answer?
So what I'm asking is, what is aiding the margins in the platform business? As in Q2 and Q3, there is slow growth in revenues. The margin has also expanded by 13%, and we have also seen a decent headcount. So what is aiding the margins?
So a few things. You know, firstly, on the technical side, there are two things that are happening. We have modernized the technology stack to and standardize the tech stack to make sure we are managing fewer technologies, and as a result, we've had productivity gains on headcount. So earlier, we had many more, you know, different types of technologies because we had done so many acquisitions. Each acquisition came with its own tech stack, and now we've created some harmony across those tech stacks, and therefore we've seen some productivity gains as we've done that. So teams are engineering teams may not just be one product specific, they could be working on multiple products at the same time. The second thing we've done is, you know, we've modernized some of the platforms, and as a result, you know, we've had some of the customers move on from old platforms to new generation platforms, and therefore our support tickets have reduced and support headcount has reduced. So it's really been operational efficiency that's contributed to lower headcount. And of course, you know, in a SaaS business, as revenue increases, margins increase faster because the marginal costs are significantly lower than the marginal revenue.
Okay, sir. So in our vision to take our revenues from 500 crores in FY24 to 1,500 crores by FY28, we have mentioned that 60% will be from inorganic. So what will be the valuation criteria for acquiring firms? Like, do we want to acquire firms that are dirt cheap? Or by high quality firms having 10% CAGR in sales, 15% margin profile, then integrate and improve the margin profile, considering our blended margins are pretty high. Just wanted to understand our thinking behind that.
Yeah, I think the so thank you for your you know, excellent research and thoughtful question. So from our perspective, you know, our goal is to acquire businesses that allow us to, you know, basically further our growth momentum rather than growth momentum. So we are looking to acquire companies that have inherent financial strength. Having said that, you know, while we are and going to end up probably paying more than we have traditionally, we are still, very, very disciplined in our negotiation, and we'll make sure that we don't overpay. And overall, the thought process is that, you know, the range, we're following a broad range from anything from 4x to 8x of EBITDA. And in order for us to for someone to be at the higher end of that range, two things have to happen. There has to be phenomenal growth in historically as well as ahead. And secondly, you know, in those type of situations, we are trying to have a situation where the founder team or the management team continues, and it's a staged buyout and earnout process so that the future is assured. Like I mentioned on another question, we are also making sure that, you know, in addition to revenue growth, EBITDA margin, we are also looking to acquire a certain size of company now, because we realize that, you know, the integration of whether it is a small company or a large company, it's the same amount of effort. So we're only looking at companies north of $20 million in revenue. And, you know, hoping that in the short term we conclude one acquisition, and more medium term we conclude another one.
Okay. So last, very interested in capital allocation policy in terms of high dividend payout. But have you thought about doing buybacks instead of dividends, as they are more tax accretive? Or do you have some other thoughts?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Yes, I think the board will obviously discuss that at the next board meeting as we get closer to the capital distribution. We have done buybacks before, so it's not that it's unprecedented in the company. And of course, we will you know, take that into account. For us, it's important to you know, make sure that we are taking into account the interest of all minority shareholders and not just the larger minority shareholders. So we'll take a balanced view as a board when we meet next.
Sir, one more question can I ask? Just one more question.
Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah. So do we plan on doing further fundraisers in future, or these acquisitions will be done through internal accruals and current cash reserves?
Yeah, I think it will depend on the check size. I think we've, you know, based on the wonderful feedback that we've gotten on these calls and also in meeting with some of the, you know, minority shareholders, I think our preference would be, if we did have to raise capital, it would be in the form of debt. You know, I shared on previous calls that we're comfortable raising debt to the tune of our PAT, which, you know, is now becoming a pretty significant number. Last year it was 109. So we feel that between internal accruals and debt, we should be okay for the next couple of acquisitions. But yes, it's possible that if these two acquisitions happen very close to each other, we may have to use the debt route.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We take the next question from the line of Puneet Singh from CCIPL. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, sir. Thank you for this opportunity. So in the last one call, you mentioned that we will complete one more acquisition in FY24 in the range of 50-70 crores in the platform business side. So are you on track for that?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we are actually well ahead of that, because we're contemplating an acquisition north of 20 million in revenues. We feel that we are ahead of what we had guided.
All right, that is very heartening. So secondly, like the previous participant mentioned, in the next redistribution that the company plans for the shareholders, why don't we consider a buyback like we have done previously, and it has been more than 1 year since we did the previous buyback, because the share has corrected about 20-25% from the top, and doing a buyback is more tax accretive, more tax efficient, and it is also EPS accretive as shares get permanently exhausted from the market. And moreover, it will also show us the confidence of our management in the Vision 2027. And the stock is available at a relatively cheaper price for a company which is in a growth phase and in a transition journey as ours right now. So, I mean, my suggestion would be to consider a share buyback in the next board meeting if possible. And what are your thoughts about the same?
Yes, again, thank you for that suggestion. As you know, we take all these recommendations and suggestions very seriously. So we will absolutely deliberate over this at the next board meeting. Another point I'd just like to highlight, you know, as so that we're all dealing with the same information, you know, we also have a situation where we have some cash located in our foreign subsidiaries. So at some point, you know, don't know whether this will be the next board meeting, but at some point, we also have to solve for that problem, where cash available in the foreign subsidiaries has to be brought back. And I am told by our advisors that the most efficient way of distributing those type of funds is actually through dividends. So that there are a couple of other complexities that we're solving as well. One of them is, you know, some of our funds are in foreign subsidiaries. So we'll have to see whether, you know, what is more likely, the dividend or the buyback, and weigh all the pros and cons.
All right, makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Abhilasha Dhananjay Satale from Quantum AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. So I have a question regarding the platform business. Even I see on a year-on-year basis, the platform business growth is also decelerated. So can you cite a reason for this, and how do you expect this segment to grow over a period of time?
Sure, thank you for your question again. Factual correction. So, on a 9-month basis, the platform business is actually more than 5%. And overall, we must take a minute to recall the context. The platform business essentially went through a scale up back in 2020. We acquired a distressed asset called Hiwire Press. And as we know through our old acquisition playbook, any distressed asset takes 3 years to turn around. So, in the first 3 years, you see a steep revenue decline. In the fourth year, you start to see, you know, some consolidation of revenue, and from the fifth year onward, you start to see revenue growth. So this particular business is following that same sequence, same playbook. In fact, we're slightly ahead, where our revenue is growing, and then once this revenue stabilizes, we'll start to take off from the following year. I'd encourage, you know, if anyone is new to MPS or looking at the MPS business, I'd encourage you to look at year on year rather than sequential quarters. There is an element of seasonality in our business, and therefore it's always more relevant even in the platform business, because short term some of the revenue gains that we are getting are more from migration projects. So even in the platform business, it's best to look at year on year and not sequential quarters. And maybe that's why your analysis, rather your conclusion, is different. Overall, the platform business is growing on a 9-month basis.
So basically, I just wanted to know, is there any seasonality?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, ma'am. We can't hear you.
Hello, am I audible now?
Yes, ma'am.
Now you are.
Yeah. So I was referring more on the quarter.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, ma'am. Are you on a speakerphone or a headset?
Yeah, I'm on that.
And please switch to your handset. That's causing a lot of disturbance in the country.
Is it clear now?
Yes, it's better. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So basically, I was trying to refer on for the quarter. So if you just see for the quarter also, we have seen some decline in revenue for the platform business. So on year-on-year basis. So, any seasonality aspect there? And over, say, you know, as the scale-up is, you know, largely happening, so how do we see this business going forward growing?
Yeah, I think, like I said, 2020 was our first year where we had a true scaled business on the platform side. Going forward, this period is the period of consolidation, so we're expecting some modest 5-10% growth. Fingers crossed, FY25, the coming financial year, we expect growth to pick up be in the double digits. We do have some fairly large RFPs that have been submitted, and we are hoping to hear favorably in the next few months.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Rahul, giving me opportunity and balance result. in a hard time, I can say this is the hard time going on, and you have predicted good growth in next few years. Sir, main growth didn't came in e-learning solution. Top line de-grew 3.09 crore, and that reduced our bottom line by 3.5 crore. So want to know the reasons for same.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your question, and thank you for your patience. As you rightly pointed out, this is a marathon, and we feel that we have the momentum that in this marathon towards 1,500 crores, even though we have this short-term blip, we will approach our final finish line much faster than we had originally planned. On the e-learning side, as I was pointing out on the previous question, we've lost an opportunity that's close to 40 crores this financial year. When I say lost an opportunity, we actually won the contract. The project has been deferred, for now. Hopefully that project does start up in 2024. And as a result, because that project, we were not able to accrue revenue from that project, so that there's been a miss in revenue and a corresponding miss in earnings. In fact, we had some extra burst capacity available that was going to work on that project, and we had kept it as an investment because we realized that to deliver a 40 crore project in 90 days is no mean feat, and that's why we had invested in capacity upfront. We have not been able to use that capacity since then. That capacity has been disassembled, but of course, short term it's given some pain. Our goal is that from Q4 onward, in the e-learning business, margins improve, and Q1 of next year, revenue and margins both improve.
Sir, again, this is the main dilemma. 30 rupees dividend you had given, it is a really wonderful gift to shareholders. But so many times you tell the acquisition is on the card and we will raise the equity. So my dilemma is why you declare the dividend when you have something to buy and something to acquire.
Yeah, I think the short answer to that is we have more cash in the system than we need for that acquisition, and we factored that in. So we had surplus funds. We believe that holding any surplus funds that we don't plan to use in 6 months is not good corporate governance. Yeah, if
understood.
We need if we don't anticipate something and we need to raise debt, we'll raise the debt. So it was mostly out of
yeah,
it being surplus.
My request is always raise the debt because equity is always costlier than the debt. That is my request. Thank you very much.
I completely agree with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Ayur Bora from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So, two questions. First is, I just want to understand about the star account strategy, which we discussed last quarter, how is it progressing and how are we scaling up on that part? The second question is on for acquisition and platform business, which sub-segment or geography we are targeting and any detail color on that?
Sure. So the star account strategy, for those that are not aware, is basically we've identified a certain number of accounts based on their current, so a star account is a star account if it meets one out of three conditions. It is of a certain size today, it has a certain potential tomorrow, or it has some strategic element that improves the quality of the total business. If an account is able to check two out of these three boxes, we call them a star account. We've identified star accounts specific for each vertical, for each business segment. And we've started to basically go deeper. When we have a star account, we make sure that not only do they have a delivery team, they have a dedicated onshore account manager, they have an executive sponsor from the senior management team, who then has a corresponding executive sponsor from the client's senior management team. And together we figure out how to unlock value in the partnership. Success is measured basically in the lines of business that we're involved in. Today, on average, with our star accounts, we have anything between 4 or 5 lines of business, and our goal is to increase that to 7 or 8 lines in the coming years. the star account strategy has been extremely successful in the content business, particularly in the scholarly side of a content business. And we are now looking to scale up the star account strategy to other parts of the business, including platforms, e-learning, and as well as education content on the content side. In terms of success, the most success we've seen is in the scholarly content side of our business. And as we scale, you know, obviously this will start to contribute even more. To give you an example, in Q3 of FY24, our scholarly journals business grew upwards of 20%, and so did our scholarly books business as well. So both lines where the strategy has worked, they've grown, you know, in the early 20s. With respect to the platform business, I believe there are, you know, from a product standpoint, there are two product areas where we are making a heavy emphasis. The first product area is the next generation of DigiCore, which we call DigiCore Pro. DigiCore Pro is a unified platform that streamlines and optimizes the publishing process from manuscript or article submission to its production to delivery. So that's one product that we feel we're going to see excellent market share for in the next 3 years. The second product is ThinkWeb, which is a order-to-cash management software, which we have now taken to the cloud, and we expect, again, growth from there. With respect to market segments, we expect most of the growth to come from North America for these two products. And in terms of what type of companies, we mostly expect universities, societies, and some medium-sized publishers to participate in these products. So that's the overarching thinking on the platform business.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Mahesh, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, Rahul. Rahul, what are the technical changes that you are seeing in each of the verticals that you operate? Could you elaborate?
What are the technical? Sorry?
Changes that you are seeing in each of the verticals that you operate?
By technical, do you mean from a technology perspective or?
Yes. The AI ML changes, the conversations that you are listening to and things like that.
So on the content side of our business, I think the biggest contribution of technology is toward speed of market, how quickly we're able to make content more available on the publisher's platform, on the customer's platform. And here, the opportunity really is to help the customer monetize their content sooner. We've estimated that for some customers, they could produce as much as 10 to 15% more content if they were able to use some of the software that we've developed for them. So with the same amount of spend, they could actually produce 10 to 15% more if the workflows, the processes, and the software was intelligently stitched together. On the platform side of our business, here we are seeing more an opportunity to integrate as well as build on top of existing AI frameworks. And a large reason for that is the platform business is, you know, the final stop where in which the end learner or the end consumer of content interacts with the content. So the level of, you know, risk appetite in this business to experiment is very low. So therefore, you know, the opportunities that are being sought are opportunities where things are, you know, are not experimental in nature, but rather seeded in and well-established. So they're more integration type of opportunities, more building on top of a framework type of opportunities rather than greenfield opportunities. On the e-learning side of our business, what we are seeing is, you know, a variety of opportunities. One opportunity is, what does AI mean in learning and development for a large corporate? We're starting to build training and materials around the subject itself, as well as to help upskill learning and development teams in this new area of artificial intelligence. The second, again, similar to our content business, how can we build the e-learning that we are delivering more efficiently and at greater speed? And then finally, again, integrating with third-party services. So, for example, you know, today you can create, you know, some animations, videos on the fly through some of the AI frameworks. So how can we use some of the frameworks to bring the overall cost of production down, but also improve the speed of the process? Unlike some of our competitors in the e-learning business, we have very little L1 type of e-learning. Most of our e-learning is L2, L3, level 2, level 3, and some even level 4. And therefore, from a pricing, from a speed standpoint, we're not getting disrupted as much. If anything, because we don't have L1, we're able to disrupt the L1 space and enter this market, which we've not really been present in. So L1 market, approaching it through a software and AI framework implementation, then becomes a attractive market share opportunity, something that we previously avoided because the price levels were too low. But now we're looking to attack this market.
Could you please elaborate on the L1 and L2 markets, please?
So yes, so you know, corporate learning and development, development of content and technology for the learning and development function of large corporates is estimated to be a $250 billion market, growing at 10-11% every year. There is a lower end of this market where basically, you know, a lot of the work that is being requested is because of wage arbitrage and cost arbitrage reasons. We don't play in this market today, simply because we don't enjoy the same level of arbitrage that some of our smaller competitors do. We are now looking to enter this market through a software approach where instead of physically getting people to build the e-learning, our software will enable a large, you know, end-to-end delivery of that e-learning. So it's going to be a new market opportunity for us.
Okay. Are there any capability gap that you have mapped out at MPS currently?
Yeah, there are. I think the a large part of that is, you know, our acquisition strategy is a large part of that. Of course, for competitive purposes, I would not, you know, provide what those capability gaps are. But yes, we, you know, for each of the markets that we operate in, scholarly, education, and corporate, we have capability gaps that we plan to address. And also for each of the business verticals, content platform, e-learning, again, we've done a, you know, a total white space analysis, figure out what the white spaces are. Wherever we can build things, we're building things. And wherever we feel that we can't build and take too long, we're looking to acquire new companies.
Okay. My last question on acquisitions. You said you're looking for greater than 20 million revenue. Is this for two acquisitions put together, or is it, you know, that excludes the 70 crore platform acquisition that you have mentioned previously?
It's not two acquisitions. It's each acquisition. So $20 million for each of the next two acquisitions is the base number in revenue.
So the total acquisitions for FY calendar year 24 could be, you know, $40 million. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think we're talking, when we say two acquisitions, we're talking calendar year.
Okay. Two acquisitions. And 20 into two, is that correct?
That is the aspiration, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Keshav Kar from Counter Cyclical PMS. Please go ahead.
Sir, I just wanted to know, sir, what has been the experience from the Liberty acquisition in Australia that we did till now, sir? How good is the response and so on?
I think the short answer is phenomenal. It's been an excellent experience to be able to you know, partner with an organization that has tailwinds. The business, their standalone EBITDA margin is north of 30%. They are growing. They're a growing company, and we are very, very satisfied with this development. We also, you know, as we had pointed out in our briefing when we had acquired Liberate, that this is a combination of, this is an acquisition that also has a combination of stage buyouts and earning, there's also some short-term earning milestones. We are pleased to report that they seem to be on track, if anything, better than on track when it comes to their you know, milestones. So very, very pleased. Usually profitable business and also growing.
Since we have acquired 65% in our consolidated numbers, so there is no minority interest that we have subtracted from our profits. So why is that?
I let our CFO respond to that question. Yeah, so we do that. We consider that. But in the consolidated financials, we consider because we are going to acquire 100%. So we account for the 100% and minority share is also being suitably adjusted there. So it is considered both ways. So revenue and profitability 100% is considered. And for the 35% margin, we consider the profitability in the minority, which is not reported separately.
Okay, okay. Sir, also, sir, regarding, so since we already have a clear path in front of us till FY28, wherein we want to reach 1500 crore top line, out of which 60 crore will come from roughly from acquisition. So even if there is no acquisition for the next 6 months or even let's say more than that, so still it makes sense to conserve the cash, because it's clear that ultimately we are going to do that acquisition. So it really doesn't make much sense that you pay today dividend and shareholders pay 35% tax on that dividend, and then few months down the line, then the company goes for capital raising. So that just jolts the investor confidence on the capital allocation side. And sir, as far as the concern about the funds being there in the subsidiaries, due to which we are considering dividend, so why can't that subsidiary make the acquisition or part of the acquisition proceeds? The subsidiary can pay. So that will resolve that issue of cash remaining in the subsidiaries.
Yeah, so to answer that quick question again, we haven't shared anything definitive. All we were basically sharing all the thoughts that we're deliberating on and all the arguments that we are discussing. There's obviously pros and cons to everything. I just presented additional information on the foreign subsidiary bit so that everyone has equal information. It was more for information sharing. And of course, please respect that, you know, we have subsidiaries in Germany, in Switzerland, in Australia, in India, in the US. So it's not that all, you know, all the monies are, you know, sitting in one subsidiary. So there is that element. And of course, you know, beyond a certain point, cross-border, transfer of funds, etc., especially when it's in the form of debt, can be more complex. To put it simply, I think, you know, our core competency is content, learning, and technology. Our core competency is not treasury, it's not cash management. We want to make sure that as a business, we are focused on our core competency. And like I said, our allocation policy is very straightforward, which is as long as we don't have visibility for 6 months or even 12 months, we will distribute the surplus funds. We just don't see value in sitting on excess funds. Even today, if you see the amount of cash we're sitting with on our balance sheet, you know, the only reason we have that cash is because we see an acquisition or two imminent in the near future. Otherwise, you know, we would not be sitting on that cash. So I think if anything, it's good corporate governance to not sit on excess funds for more than 12 months. And that's all that we're doing. As you will note, we also have a relatively higher margin business. So we are generating upwards of 100 crores in cash every year. So the business will continue to generate cash as well. It's not just, you know, a snapshot where this is the level of cash. So, and also, you know, from an integration standpoint, you know, we don't see ourselves doing more than, you know, two a year, maybe three, but we don't see ourselves doing more than two or three acquisitions a year. Because of management bandwidth, integration, you also don't want a situation where you're acquiring businesses but the standalone business is not growing. We want organic and inorganic growth, not just inorganic growth. So we're only looking at it from that perspective, that we're not sitting on surplus funds for no good reason.
So thank you very much, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Jalaj from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Rahul, I have just one question. So if I were to break down the 1500 crore target which we are targeting in FY27, you said that 40% would come from organically the way we will grow. So that comes out and stands with a CAGR of almost 15-15.5%, 15-16%. So could you talk a little about what would lead to that growth or what would be the driver? Because have things changed historically or the industry structure has changed? Because even if I were to see the phase from FY22 to FY23, we had a CAGR of the similar range. There were acquisitions which were involved in it. So has anything structurally changed or there is some other driver that gives us the confidence for this growth?
Sure. I think if I could divide, so I won't talk about the inorganic piece. I think we've covered that pretty comprehensively in the previous questions. For your question, I'll focus more on organic growth. I think that there are two ways to think of this. One is what has changed in the structure, and the second is what has changed in terms of our strategy and execution as a company. So from a structure standpoint, with respect to, there are a few things that I can talk about here. So first, from a structure standpoint, our most mature part of our business, which is the content business, has seen a very major structural change. In fact, a few structural changes. First, with the Chennai floods, and the pandemic following in such close succession, our customers have now started to revisit their supply chain choices, looking for more resilience, looking for scaled partners like MPS that have a continuous improvement mindset and resilient infrastructure that makes sure that their revenue generation through content is not disrupted. So as a result, it's not just MPS, other scaled partners like MPS as well have seen this lift on the demand side coming in because our customers are being more sensitive to how they manage and orchestrate the supply chain rather than just finding the cheapest solution. So on the content side, that's one big structural change that's taken place. On the education side of our business, there is this new emergence of disintermediation where traditionally our market share or our target market ended at the publisher. Increasingly, we are seeing that our partnerships are now extending to educational institutes, but also some of the new edtech companies, learning companies, and that has created a whole new demand side of business for us. The third structural change that we've seen is our customers are slowly becoming subscription businesses, and therefore the speed that they need in the production of the and the at the volume that they desire can only be achieved by partners that have significant technical expertise but also have IP that can deliver on that promise. And as a result, again, we're seeing a significant increase on the demand side as a result of that. The fourth thing is, of course, on the e-learning side of our business, which is the corporate learning and development side. Again, we are seeing corporates now understanding the need to consolidate their supply chain with a few suppliers that can actually take over a large part of the learning and development function, almost in a managed services format, rather than outsourcing individual e-learning modules to individual e-learning vendors. So that's like a fourth big change. And then the fifth big change we're seeing is more in the platform side of the business, where again it's more around companies like MPS that are actually don't just have the best technology today, but future-proof them against disruptions like AI and ML as they exist today. So we are, for example, investing heavily through our MPS Labs division in incubating new products and new innovations. So it's mostly around future-proofing. So those are the kind of the structural benefits that we are getting from the market. So those are the secular tailwinds that exist in the marketplace. From a strategy perspective, I think we are pulling many more levers now. We're launching on average 4 to 5 new capabilities/products every year, which is resulting in a higher share of wallet for us. We are following now. Today we service over 500 customers, and so we are following now what we call a star account strategy, which basically covers 10 to 20% of our customer base, where we're trying to basically unlock all the IP that we've acquired over the years for that customer base and trying to give them efficiencies in return. So going deeper across a strategic customer base. The third thing we're doing is from a geography standpoint, we expanded, we're trying to become more global. We expanded into Australia through the acquisition of Liberate. Through the acquisition of EI Design, we strengthened our position in India as well as the Middle East. So there's also a geographic play that's taking place. So I think it's a combination of being in a market that has tailwinds and having the right strategy to unlock that opportunity, but most importantly, having the right teams, the right culture of ownership, that is able to unlock the combination of excellent strategy and excellent opportunity. And we are creating that culture of ownership, by actually recognizing that. So last year we identified about 50-55 people that were awarded ESOPs. That list will only grow in the coming April. It's a combination of market opportunity, strategy, but most importantly, execution.
Thanks for that detailed answer. Just as a follow-up on to that, are clients able to or ready to shell out more money for the same services? So that structural change gives us a fair idea of how things are changing and where we are positioned in that change. But are the customers ready to spend more for the services or the new services, say a platform or even on the content side? Are they ready to spend more? And secondly, how do you see the competition evolving over there?
Yeah, I think the short answer is the customers are willing to spend more. Yes, the answer is yes, but they're not being silly about it. So as the spends have grown, the line of questioning and the detailing around that spend has only increased. So they are being very, very, very detail oriented in terms of, are we actually providing the value that we're promising, or are we just, charging higher for the current service that we provide? So yes, I think customers are spending more with the existing suppliers, but they're also getting more value out of the partnership, and they are ensuring through their Q&A, through their processes that the value is increasing at a greater pace than the spend, and they're exceptionally good at this. Of course, we have limited view or vantage point on what is the value for them. Of course, we understand that it is a combination of speed, which results in monetization of content quicker. Plus, it's of course the advantages that you get from a more resilient supply chain.
Got it. And then quickly, I'll squeeze in one last one. How do you see the industry growth rates for all three verticals? If you could talk a little about them, content learning, e-learning, and platform.
Yeah, I think I'd like to stick with my original guidance. Despite the minor blip in e-learning, like I said, this is a marathon, not a sprint. I'm equally disappointed that this quarter here, quarter there is a bit of a hiccup, but it is what it is. You just power through and make sure that this is not systemic and we bounce back very quickly. And I know we are going to bounce back quickly because I have that information with me. So I'm very comfortable with where we are today. I'd be delighted if we were reporting a different set of numbers, but I'm feeling very comfortable because it's only a matter of time where we will be on this very call reporting something different. So from my perspective, content will get back to the double digit. In fact, Q3 we grew at 8%. It's just that we had this ripple in the education business that pulled us back, but content we expect to be between 10 to 15% revenue growth, platform at 15%, and e-learning at between 15 to 20%. And yes, e-learning, I understand that's difficult to swallow in the short run, but we're pretty confident that the 15 to 20% is highly achievable based on the information we have today.
Got it. So this is from a perspective of the company, but the industry growth rate also in the same sync, or is it higher or lower?
On the corporate earnings side, depending on what industry report you read, it tends to be 10 to 12%. We, of course, are a combination of a few premium assets. So that's why we feel confident that our growth rate will be higher. On platforms, it's pretty similar to what the market is growing at, so nothing extraordinary. And then on content, again, it depends whether you look at the total market or whether you look at the opportunity available for scale players like MPS. I think total market would be lower, but if you look at scale players like MPS, we're pretty consistent with how other players are growing.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rahul.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity and for the color that you provided. Sorry to go about on the same thing that the 40 crore thing. Just to understand your thoughts that what are the readings out of it in terms of why the customer would have gone into that process and what are the opportunities in terms of recouping some of it at a later point and what are the potential such risks that may come because of the macro uncertainty that we're living into?
Yeah, just to clarify, the project has been delayed. It's not been cancelled. And I obviously can't go into their individual reasons why. All I can say is they're a strategic partner. It's delayed. We believe them. We've been working with them. We believe them. I have no reason to question why they delayed it. They've given us very good reasons to the extent that, you know, they've given us more information than what we needed. So it's delayed, and we will wait for the project to start up. We're not giving up. We do have a, you know, signed piece of paper, so that gives us some comfort. So like I said, minor blip. These things happen in, you know, life. And I think the biggest learning, of course, is to make sure that, you know, when you are in a situation like this where you're expecting a major scale up, you also have other eggs or other plays available to you, rather than having so much dependency on one project. But again, you know, would I have not chased this project? You know, I don't think that it's just such a good opportunity to scale our experience center business. There's no reason why we should have not proceeded. Again, it's got little to do with the macroeconomic environment. It has more to do with their corporate and communication strategy, very, very custom to their situation. And it's more delayed. It's not been cancelled.
Right. And did you somewhere said that this would have ideally contributed around roughly 10 crore in this quarter if this was on track?
So I was actually thinking more 30-10, but again, it's difficult to predict because, you know, the number in total is 40. It was supposed to start late October and early March. Now, it's difficult to predict how it would have gone, but that is the total number, 40 crores to start late October and early March.
And since there's no timeline, as you said, you have also come back to some of the costs which you were kind of building into it. So what is the reversal of a cost saving that would come into next quarter, assuming this is not ramping up in this quarter as well?
Yeah, I think for competitive reasons, I wouldn't want to get so granular on those numbers. I'm sure, you know, with some intelligence, you can arrive at what those numbers are. I can share a high-level experience center business is a 30% margin business for us, unlike the e-learning business, which is more like 20-25%. So I'm sure you can do some back of the envelope calculations. We do know this center is not going to be launched in this fiscal year. That much information we have. But we are also aware that this project has not been cancelled.
Right. And on the LLG, you said that it's shaping up well. So is it safer to assume the run rate that we saw in the previous quarter for 1 month into three is at least what we might have done, or there's a seasonality to it?
Sorry, Rahul, I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat it again?
So since we had a higher number of days of consolidation in the LLG transaction, is it safe to assume it would have trended on the similar lines in this quarter, or is there any seasonality for which this could be higher or lower in this quarter?
So I think when you say LLG, are you referring to Liberate?
Yeah, yes.
Sorry. familiar with the acronym. So Liberate the strongest. Liberate the in Australia the financial year is July 1st to June 30th, and their strongest quarters in their terminology are their Q4 and their Q1. So there is some seasonality, but yes, the business is performing well.
Understood. That's it from my side, and best of luck for the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Yashi Lohia from Ayush Agarwal Research. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So I had a question. So can you provide me your profit margins that are associated with like your content solutions platform and e-learning?
Sure. I think so. If you look at our investors presentation, slide 4 provides that information. Slide 5 provides that information. Content Q3, our margin was 43.08%, platform 42.45%, and e-learning
16.15%. Okay. And also, I was going through the presentation. I saw that in the e-learning segment, the headcount numbers have reduced from 425 to 357. Can you provide us an insight about the same?
Yes, like I was sharing, we were about to get a pretty massive project worth 40 crores from a premier energy corporation. That project has been delayed, so we had to disassemble that capacity, and that's the reduction, as you say.
Okay. So just one more question I had. So are we planning to we have recently diversified in Australia. So are we planning to, from the other two acquisitions that are going to be there in financial year 24, are we planning to diversify? Where are we exactly planning to diversify?
So one of the acquisitions is focused on the platform business. At this point, I feel slightly uncomfortable given, it's forward-looking, price-sensitive to share more details. Having said that, it is one of our goals to continue to expand geographically. It's definitely one of our goals.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Karan, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Am I audible?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Actually, sir, I have a couple of questions for you. On the annual report, I have noticed that there are two property names in the name of HMG Ambassador Property Management Private Limited. And the second one is Brigade Marketing Company Private Limited. So I want to know, are these a couple of companies, are they subsidiary of MPS, or what are these entities?
So these are properties that came to us from, they're owned by MPS. They came to us from when the ADI group acquired MPS back in 2012. We have over a period of time tried to monetize these assets, not had good luck, and are always, on these calls, I always say, if you have any leads, please send them to our CFO. We're very, very interested in monetizing these assets.
So are you looking to sell these assets or you want to lease them?
Both options are open to us as long as we can get a good return.
Oh, okay. That's it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Subham Shingela, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
So, sir, I have two questions. One is on your long-term growth guidance, right? And sorry, I joined a bit late. So you have a very aggressive long-term guidance. And in the current economic environment, like how do you view that long-term guidance and what are the steps that you are taking to ensure that we are on track on that guidance?
Yeah, I think if you look at our overall guidance that we gave last year, it was a step up from 500 crores to 1500 crores. 500 to 900 organically, 900 to 1500 inorganically. As you know, given the current macroeconomic conditions, we are in a situation where I hope I don't get quoted on this, but it is a buyer's market when it comes to acquiring new companies. So we are going to double dip on that strategy and use the macroeconomic conditions to, in the short term, acquire more as much as we can, because these are the right conditions in which, you know, you want to be a buyer. So that's definitely, we're feeling very confident about our inorganic strategy, and we feel that it's going to be more near term and the short term rather than the long term when it comes to inorganic. On the organic side, I think we're doing two things. One, overarching, if you look at it, the aspiration is only, you know, it represents roughly 12% growth year on year. So it's not like, you know, it's not unachievable. You know, it's very, 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 very achievable. The market and the industries that we are operating in are growing at that industry percentage. So as long as we can grow at the industry percentage, we'll get there. And of course, the other thing that we're making sure is that the companies we're acquiring are companies that are growing at 10-12%. So that gives us some comfort on the organic growth as well. But I think this is an opportune moment for MPS to use its impressive balance sheet and be, you know, get more aggressive on acquisitions in the short term.
Okay. Thanks for that, sir. And my second question is regarding your acquisition strategy only, right? In the last call, you mentioned that you are looking to follow a model very similar to PDS Limited, or you are at least thinking in that direction, where you onboard entrepreneurs who are having some vested interest in growing the company. So what do you have some concrete steps that you have taken in that direction? Like, have you onboarded some people on your team who are looking particularly in that direction, like your inorganic strategy direction? Like, have you formed a team for that? Like, some steps in that direction?
Yeah, I think so. We have a pretty efficient corporate development team, and rather than having, you know, we're not following a mass market strategy here. We're following a thoughtful, targeted strategy where we have deep relationships with, I think, four investment banks that make sure that they know our criteria, that any of those type of deals come to us. The second thing we're making sure is we know the promoters who we want to work with, who we think we will have a collaborative future together. We have already approached most of them. I personally have good relationships with most you know, players in our community, and we have others in the senior management team, like you know, Tony Alves, who's a thought leader, Kelly Lake, who's a thought leader, you know, others as well. So David Goodman, who's joined recently in our education business. So we have these personalities that are considered thought leaders in the space, and they then in turn are connecting us to promoters and entrepreneurs as well. In fact, one of the more recent deals that we've been working on was brought to us by someone from our senior management team. So a lot of it is organic word of mouth, and from a you know, overall approach standpoint, again, the goal is to partner up with entrepreneurs, and sometimes it's not entrepreneurs, it's management teams, because you know, you could have a management team that is part of a very large company. The large company does not think of this particular division as a core asset and therefore divest from the core asset, and then you just take over the management team. So it's a combination of owners, promoters, but also some management teams that we've known over the years that are part of large companies that don't really feel this is the right type of business or division for them, and this is the market under this market condition. You know, the power in the buyer seller relationship sits more with the buyer, and we recognize this is a small window of opportunity we have over 6 to 12 months. And we're trying to convert this window of opportunity into something pretty real and pretty significant for MPS.
Okay. And so if I can slip one more, like anything on your buyback side, like, do you have a buyback strategy as well? Like, if the stock price dips, then you do a buyback? Or is it just like yearly stuff? That will be the last one.
Yeah, of course. You know, the MPS board and our management team is very confident about Vision 2027. Like I said, you know, this small blip aside, we are racing and charging towards that vision, and now feeling even confident that we'll get there sooner rather than later, as we had pointed out, because this new window of acquisitive opportunity that suddenly presented itself to us. So yeah, you know, we are not speculators, but of course, you know, we've been pretty decent in our capital allocation over the last 10, 12 years. So if we see a window of opportunity, we will jump at that opportunity. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Arora for closing comments.
Thank you for your active participation in our earnings call, for being supportive in quarters like this one, and for being patient with us. We appreciate, you know, your thoughtful questions. You make us, you know, learn and improve. Your outside in this perspective is very helpful. Again, I want to thank all the stakeholders who have contributed towards our success and thank them for the continued support, the respect. Our journey together over the years has been truly remarkable. MPS has a very unique opportunity specifically in 2024 to build serious scale. I think our theme for 2024 is really supercharging scale. And with your kind support and patience, we will use this calendar year to build and unlock that serious scale. Thank you again for your continued support, feedback, and partnership mindset.
Thank you. On behalf of MPS Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.